Tech is a bi-weekly podcast exploring the intersections of technology and ministry. It is part of the podcast network sponsored by Wells, the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Our show today is hosted by Martin Spriggs and Sally Draper. Welcome to Wells Tech, everybody. This is episode 724. We're recording on May 9th. It's a Thursday in the year 2024. Welcome, everybody. Show about technology and ministry and where those two intersect. And helping me along the way, more than helping, probably a core to the show. Call her that, Sally Draper. Hello, Sally.
Always a good day when I'm not called a thorn in the side. I'm glad to be a core to the show. That's awesome.
No.
Hello, Martin. Happy to be joining you on this lovely spring day that's stirring up all kinds of lovely pollens and hay fever for me. So if I sneeze, you guys forgive me.
Yeah.
Also happy to be joined by our education technology gurus, Rachel and Jason.
Oh, they got an upgrade. It was used to be just correspondents. Now they're gurus.
They are gurus. They've earned it. That's right.
I feel like we've gotten a promotion, Rachel.
Gonna double your pay today.
Yeah. Oh, yes. I've been waiting for that, Martin. Oh, thank you so much. You heard it here first on Wells Tech.
Yeah. That's the voice of Jason Schmidt. He's up in not to call it Northern Wisconsin, but he's north of me. So appreciate Jason joining the show as usual. And Rachel Feld from our beloved College of Ministry, Martin Luther College. Hey, Rachel.
Hey, Martin.
How are you?
Oh, doing pretty great. It's fairly warm here, which is very nice. Classes are wrapping up. There's always that excitement of commencement and graduation and sending a bunch of new teachers out into the field and pastors onto the seminary and staff ministers out to the field. So it's going to be great.
Nice. Nice. And I heard there was a life change in your life recently too. So congratulations on that.
Well, thank you. Yes, I did get engaged last weekend, weekends ago. I don't know. I lose track of time, but yes, very exciting.
That's super awesome. Yeah, I'm really happy for you. All right. We are going to be concluding our conversation, our school year-long conversation on AI, and specifically our guide through this, kind of our outline has been the AI classroom, the ultimate guide to artificial intelligence in education by Dan. I don't know if we've ever read who the authors are, Dan Fitzpatrick, Amanda Fox, and Brad Weinstein. Something that Rachel had read and done some work and some study materials on a ways back, but I've enjoyed the journey. How about you guys?
Yeah, it's been a good trip. There's lots of good information in here, so I appreciate the opportunity to dig in and work through this with you guys.
This is a hard book to. I would think this would be a hard book to write, because the ground, the AI ground on which we stand, is shifting pretty quickly. But they've done a nice job at laying some good foundation, and that's most of what these chapters that we're going to talk about today are. You kind of know AI and what are you going to do with it as maybe a leader in your organization. So some good stuff there. But the last chapters we read just were tool after tool after tool after tool. And there seems to be dozens of them coming up every month. And that's hard to stay on top of. But it's great to call out those that are specific to and most helpful to educators.
Definitely. Many of them are out there. I was just reading towards the end of the book, there's an epilogue and it says, this was a hard book to write, Martin. It says, the ground is changing constantly, and As a matter of fact, as we wrote this book, OpenAI released ChatGPT-4. So that's how long ago they wrote the book, because, you know, that's been, what, maybe a year and a half ago that was the big announcement. Early last year, I remember Michael Flieger, who's currently acting as principal at Risen Savior here in Mankato, and he sent us a poem over Christmas 2022 that he wrote with AI. And we were like, whoa, that's really interesting that it could write a poem about Wells Tech. And from there, the world has changed pretty dramatically. And every day, actually, I was on the phone with my son last night, and he was telling me about an image generator that he subscribed to and is playing with and stuff. So, I mean, hearing it more and more in lots of different ways. I think education leaders must be hearing it more and more in lots of different ways as well. And maybe we can give them some advice and direction from these last chapters of the book. You guys were going to talk to the leaders of Wells schools, for instance. What would you tell them today about AI?
I think my biggest piece of advice for people would just be to recognize the reality that this is something that's out there. And as much as we want to put the toothpaste back into the tube or have things go back to the way that they were, we have reached a point where it's just not going to be possible. So really what it's going to come down to is we'll have those organizations that continue to try to resist it and then are going to end up getting kind of swept away in the flood. And then there are the others that are going to embrace it and really figure those things out. And those are the organizations that are going to have an advantage over others that are maybe a little bit, not necessarily slower to embrace, but definitely like the people that really, really struggle with this kind of thing and adopting this and just recognizing reality, because the risk that we run by trying to ignore something like this really is going to give us that reputation of not really being up with what's going on in our world. And that could put some of those barriers in place for people to come to us and to work with us, because we're just kind of reinforcing that reputation that we're all, you know, they're Wells Lutherans, they're stuck in the mud, and, you know, like they don't know what's going on with what the world is like right now. So that would be my suggestion to leaders who are looking at this, is like, really, you know, be thoughtful, of course, and do your due diligence. You know, don't just go in and dive headfirst into the pool, but you know, you definitely need to be figuring this stuff out, and sooner rather than later.
Rachel, yeah, from your perspective as an educator and training our future teachers who are not in the classroom yet, same story. What would your advice be, or what are you telling kids there?
I definitely agree with everything Jason said, and I'll add that we need to make sure that we don't knock it till you try it. You know, it's so easy to just say, "Oh, that's computers doing a thing, and that's not okay." You know, the computer, we don't want to do that. We want our people to think for themselves, and absolutely we want our teachers to think for themselves, but it's, you know, it's not thinking, it's thinking in a different way when we use AI. Just like using an internet search isn't not thinking, it's finding the information in a different way. Or using encyclopedias, that wasn't not thinking when I used them in, you know, fourth and fifth grade for research things. That was using the resources we have. Well, now AI is a resource that we have, and I can't tell you the number of ways it has saved me time just in the past few months, from writing lengthy emails, you know, that I didn't really know how to get started, to writing a quick, like, "Hey, I don't know what kind of assessment I'm looking for this class. Let's see what ChatGPT has to say." To, you know, I'm on the knot.com trying to throw a wedding together and have a little AI chatbot pop up that says, hey, would you like some help? And me saying, yes. And they and this chatbot says, okay, where are you getting married? You need these kind of vendors. We can contact the vendors for you and give us your email address. They'll send back a quote.
Wow.
I mean, at a certain point, we are poor stewards of our time if we're not using some of these tools to make our lives better. And I think that understanding what the tool is, how it works, and what it does is going to be absolutely vital for educators so that we can know the difference between plagiarism and, you know, what's the academic integrity versus this is how we're gonna be making things now, and we cite it or we understand where we got the information from and we go with it because it is a tool that we have.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Go ahead, Sally. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, as an education leader, I maybe would be a little intimidated by what you're saying, and that feels like I need to know everything. Is that the approach you would take? That, boy, you better be up on all your P's and Q's? Or is there an easy way to be innovative and embrace this without being overwhelmed?
If anyone can know everything about it, that would be amazing. And also, can we please hire them? Because that would be super helpful to have someone who knows. You know, it's like any part of education, I think. No one is ever going to know everything. But what I've always tried to both show to my little kids when I was teaching in the grade school and also now my college and graduate students is you're always learning. It's not bad to say, oh, I don't know, let's go look, and to be curious and to explore. So I think that's where the critical thinking skills come in, of not just wholeheartedly saying, oh, it's AI, it's bad, or oh, it's AI, that sounds like a great idea. We have to be critical thinkers. And that's what I want my students to do. That's what I want my faculty to do. That's what our education leaders need to do.
Yeah, and I would just add, like, all of the things that Rachel just said. But then, you know, and I would also add, like, we've shifted, I think, from being knowledge consumers to knowledge appliers. So, you know, like, it's really not about, it's not about knowing everything about the tool or about how, like, what the tool does or what you can and can't do with it, but it's really applying principles of just, like, what, you know, like Rachel was saying, like, that critical thinking piece. Like, so what are the principles that I'm trying to get at? Or what do I, you know, like if it comes to a, you know, like a three paragraph essay, you know, is what is the point of my assignment? What do I want to accomplish? Do I want people to write a three paragraph essay? Or am I looking at, like, what's the thinking behind that? How do you structure an argument? All of that kind of stuff. And can I, like, because I just need to make the assumption that things are being made with artificial intelligence. So if I assume that's I'm starting from that place, then how do I apply what I'm seeing here into that framework of, like, this is what I'm hoping people get out of this, or this is what, like, their intent is with this communication, or something like that. So I really, like, for as much as people will say that this is making us dumber, I actually think that this is making us a lot smarter, because we really have to be thoughtful consumers of information now, and really pay attention to what's being said, how it's being said, and, like, that message that is wrapped around it, because words are powerful and important. And just because a human didn't generate them from the start doesn't still mean that they still have impact.
So from a
Jason, we're agreeing way too much. I don't know what's
I
going
know.
On
I,
here.
I
we
think
gotta get
I,
some controversy in here. Yeah.
This yeah, this might be the last time we have to be together. I don't know if this I don't know if we can handle this, Rachel. Yeah. Come up
so
with something
from
for us to disagree on, Rachel or Mark on Martin.
So from a well, I could start talking about the three boxes and then we could have
oh,
another
right? Yeah. Oh,
about
you just lost me.
So that
you lost
was in
me
these,
on the boxes.
That was in these
like,
chapters
I still
two,
don't
10 to 12.
Yeah, I skipped those, sorry.
From a practical perspective, and somebody may be coming, I'm trying to put my shoes in the put my feet in the shoes of somebody who's just coming into this fresh and saying, "Boy, I've got the summer, and you know, maybe I want to dedicate some time to this. Where do I start?" Kind of have to determine where AI fits in your world too. And I think there's maybe three, and maybe this is the controversial piece, three different areas. One would be just on the pure productivity side. It can help me write permission slips and, you know, some of the stuff you hate doing and stuff that, you know, a teacher could spend better time doing other things, you know, just the blocking and tackling, writing this policy, or, you know, even, you know, inching toward program and lesson plan and that kind of stuff. So from a pure productivity perspective, helpful, right? Then the second area would be kind of crafting educational experiences that are over and above what the child is getting or your students are getting today. So you're involving AI, you're introducing them to AI to enrich that learning experience. And then finally, I think there's almost an AI curriculum. What I mean by that is these students are going out into a world where AI will exist, and it might differentiate their place in the world. And I'm not talking from a child of God perspective. You know, we could have that conversation too. But from a knowledge worker perspective, if you're equipping the child to use these tools, they are going to be better prepared to find a better job, you know, reach whatever, you know, dream they want to reach. Now, that sounds very secular, but I think, you know what I mean, that there's an AI component to the world that they're going into. So I think as you're a teacher going into a school year, those are maybe three areas that AI is going to play a part. And maybe you start with one of those. I don't know. What do you guys think?
So my suggestion to people is always start with your outcome. Like, what do you want to, like, what's the end result? And then do your backwards design from there. So, mm-hmm. you know, if my goal is I want to save myself time, mm-hmm. then I can explore applications of generative AI at that point to see, okay, now what are some of the things like, and then I just start asking myself the question, well, okay, I have to do this thing. Can I do that with AI? Or, you know, I need to write this policy.
Right.
Can I do that with AI?
Or plan this
like,
field
so,
trip or, you know, whatever.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, starting with that end goal in mind is really going to help us from becoming overwhelmed, because like it's one of those, we're in one of those situations where like, there are literally limitless possibilities.
Yeah.
Like it's not even, like I don't say that kind of thing very often, but like
yep.
I really would struggle with saying like, no, I couldn't do anything with that, or like I'm out of ideas.
Right.
You know, there's just always going to be something. So really what helps when you're faced with a situation like that is just I focus on a goal, and this is the thing that I'm doing, and then just ask the question, can I do it with
yeah.
AI, and then go from there.
I think that productivity piece, that what's in it for me, which is not a bad thing, is maybe one of the easier tip your toe in the water kinds of things to get used to AI. I think where it gets a little more difficult and you got to do a lot more research is how do I embed this into the learning experience for my kids? How, you know, what tools do I present to them? How is this going to manifest itself in the classroom? And that's where books like this are helpful. We've got the tools and it kind of gives you a little bit of a roadmap for how to do that, right? And I think, Rachel, that was probably your goal when you put together kind of the reading group and the resources that you put together, right?
Yeah, I think that the more we can get people to kind of dip their toes in, and I agree, Martin, that productivity tool is often the easiest entrance point for teachers and technology, because name me a teacher that isn't feeling like they have a bazillion and a half things to do and could use a little more time to get them done. And so anytime I talk technology and technology integration, you know, it doesn't have to start with the students, because a lot of times that's where that fear comes in of, right. I don't quite understand the tool. What are the students going to do with the tool? They're going to know it more than I am. It's going to go poorly. And those are all valid fears. I think there are fears that can be overcome, most definitely, but valid and a potential barrier for any technology use. So when the technology use starts with just the teacher in a more controlled environment, that can kind of open up a lot of different possibilities. Linked in the presentation that I gave to MVL, there are a lot of different kind of prompt starters that you can stick into ChatGPT or Google. Is it Gemini now? I think.
Yeah, it's Gemini.
Or you know, whatever AI you're looking to use, that can, you know, you just change a couple of words to make it fit and see what comes out. And I think those kind of easy entrance points can open up people's eyes to, oh, if it can do this, maybe it can do this too. And understanding that you can just kind of try and see what happens.
Yeah, I'm wondering, shifting gears just a little, towards the last chapter of the book where they get into emotional intelligence and AI, and concerns there from you guys? Have you had experience or seen anything happening with students as they begin to use more AI in their lives?
I think that's where, like, that's where the adult guidance part comes in, right? So, you know, we, at least in our system, we see a lot of, there's a lot of potential for abuse there. And it's one of those things, like, you know, kids just kind of, they just kind of do stuff because they, like, they're the early adopters, they'll figure stuff out. But without an adult there to help them kind of understand what's going on, or like what they're really, like the implications of what they have, like that's an important conversation for us as educators to make sure that we have when we're talking to kids. You know, as we were planning for getting ready for today, you know, we talked about like the effect that this could have on kids' mental health, right? And you know, and an example, like I have we have a student in our system that is there's a chat bot that allows, it takes on all of these different personas, and she's like, well, this is my best friend, and we're like, it's not really, like, this is affecting your human relationships. So, you know, like that mental health piece, and just paying attention to how kids are interacting with this stuff is super important. But, you know, and again, like, we have to acknowledge the reality that these things are out there and kids are going to access them. So blocking is not the right way to go about it. But we really need to talk about the importance of human interaction. And I think even more now, like, it's really important for us to emphasize for our student users that how important that is, that they have those quality human relationships and interactions with others. Like a computer is never going to be able to provide for those kinds of needs. It's just never going to happen. We need to have other people in our lives.
I agree again, Jason. This is a slippery slope. I, you know, think to students I've had previously who, you know, maybe struggled with personal relationships, or ones who, for whatever reason, just didn't have many close personal relationships or had issues with trusting people. And if you have a a person on your phone that you can tell anything to, you know for sure that they can't post, like they're not going to share what you're telling them with the people in your class. They're available anytime, day or night. They're always going to answer, no matter if, you know, mom and dad are screaming at each other in the kitchen, or it's 2 a.m. and they can't sleep, or who knows what. I mean, that sounds like a really great friend to me. But that friend can't give me a hug and is more than likely not going to remind me, you know, about Jesus' love and forgiveness. There are so many parts there that just won't be there that you want in a good friendship. But the convenience and the fact that is the AI going to tell you anything you don't want to hear? Probably not. Mm-hmm. You know, you're going to get your proverbial yes man available 24/7. It sounds like a really great idea. And I can see how students or even adults, I mean, I don't think this is limited to kids, could really get attached to this kind of relationship. And especially because so many of our relationships now are based in text. You know, I've got friends from college that I use Facebook Messenger with all the time. Haven't seen them in a couple years. We're still really close, but it's all that digital communication. So, you know, what's the big difference when that digital communication comes from a computer versus my friends from college?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So this is a slippery slope, and one that if anything about AI scares me, I think this might be the biggest thing that scares me.
Yeah, and this is not new. Ever since we had Siri and Alexa and those, you know, kind of dumber AIs, and they're getting smarter. You know, there's that little friend in the box. And this is, it's going to be the next step, and it's going to be everywhere. You know, Apple's talking about probably this summer at their developer conference, you know, how AI is going to be built into a lot more things. And yeah, that can be okay. It can help us in some ways, but yeah, I would agree with you. The great news is that we have such a wonderful message to tell, and the life of a disciple of Christ is built on relating to others. Yeah, there's self-awareness and all the other things that the psychologists talk about, but ultimately, how we relate to each other and how we care for each other and how we share the love of God with each other is at the center of what we're teaching still. And that's where it all starts. This other stuff is just periphery. So it's good to think about and be aware as we plan for this future that, you know, we're not going to be able to escape. We need to ultimately embrace the world in which we live and figure out how a disciple lives in it.
Yeah, I was talking to someone just the other day about how long Wells Tech has been on the air and how we still have, actually, I was talking to Gail Potratz, former ed tech guru on Wells Tech. That's who I was talking with, and how we still have things to talk about and how AI gave us this whole new world to talk about. Mm-hmm. I don't think we're done with this discussion, even though we're done with the book. I think we're going to hear more and more about the impact and the innovation and the leaders and the curriculums and all of those pieces of this puzzle that we're discussing today.
Yeah. So just to close out the conversation, if somebody, teacher, pastor, any of our listeners interested in learning more, trying to do this right, this book would be a good resource. Are there other people groups, so to speak, that they can tap on or tap into to have conversations around, you know, what's the best practice here? Where would we direct them? You know, they can obviously visit us on the show, but there's got to be other places where they can have these conversations.
Yeah, I would encourage people just to like seek out those other those existing networks, like ISTE, or if you're in Wisconsin, the COSIN has a really active chapter. But like any of those ed tech advocacy groups, this is like top of mind for any of them. So this is there's going to be a ton of resources and development that goes on out there. As this field advances, and that's going to be a really good place to connect with other like-minded people and kind of, have a bit of an understanding. And I think too, like, for a lot of and maybe it's a generational thing or just a timing thing or the world has changed, but my like my perception in our well circles is that we're tending to adopt this maybe a little bit more quickly than some of the other things that we've seen in the past. So even just like within regions, there are people that are really embracing and adopting these things. I think of the like the Ryan Kirchhoffs of the world and the and the like the things that Rachel's doing at MLC, and like there are a lot of people who are really kind of getting into this and have that thought leadership that they're bringing to their areas. So check those local spheres of influence too, just to see who's getting things figured out.
Another great resource to Jason mentioned ISTE, which has some great AI stuff. Also, Common Sense Education has some really great AI resources. They have AI literacy lessons for grades 6 to 12. But I think they would be great to go through as a faculty, just to kind of get talking and get thinking about what AI's impact might be.
Very good. Jason, you mentioned COSIN. Sally, that's our ministry resource this week, isn't it?
We do have a ministry resource that I stumbled upon through some articles about the COSIN recent. I don't know if it was a convention or a meetup or what it was, but it was in April. And they closed out their event with a discussion that included kind of a scholarly guy and another scholarly guy, not to diss him, but Hadi Partovi. Is that the right
Yep, that's
pronunciation?
correct. Hadi Partovi.
And he's behind code.org. And the article pointed to the fact that there's also teachai.org, which Hadi's participating in. So from teachai.org, you can tap into some of their policy resources and a guidance toolkit, which looks to be a really great resource. So perhaps this is where you start this summer with the AI Guidance for Schools toolkit, which it's done in a Google Doc, and you can make a copy of it and begin to edit and adopt it as your own as you work through different policies and things that they've drafted for you here in this resource. So just wanted to make sure you had access to that. There is one other link I'll include, and I'm drawing a blank as to the background on this one, but it does have a section. It's an AI tools document as well, and it has a section on strategies for success. So again, areas where you can consider initiatives and policies around these different strategies about AI. Set the right conditions, host conversations, spotlight success, etc. So both of these resources will be included in the ministry resources section of the website.
Excellent,
That one
excellent.
comes from ISTE, Sally.
Okay, and ISTE went. Excellent. So ISTE and Teach AI both represented.
Very good. All right, let's go on to the next segment of our show. Fan favorite, my favorite, picks of the week. Rachel, want to start us off?
I sure would love to. So my pick of the week, I have to give credit to Jason because he is the first one to introduce me. We're getting along way too well in
Yep, that's okay.
Kinder, gentler world.
That's
We've done
right,
that
yeah.
over the summer, yeah.
He was the first one to introduce me to school AI. And when it was his pick a while ago, and we looked at some of the student things, but there are also some teacher spaces that are just really both entertaining and also very useful. And I went a bit on the entertaining side when I was playing with them, but they are different AI assistants that you can chat with. We've got a education coach, a Common Core expert, a curriculum coach, a essay grading assistant, a research assistant, which I might be trying to see how good it does with some dissertation research. The one I played with was actually a field trip coordinator. And I was perhaps a bit snarky with it just to see what would happen with it. I told it that I wanted to take my students to Shell's Brewery in New Ulm, and it told me that, well, that was maybe not the best place to take students. However, they could see that it had some historical and perhaps science applications. And so then it asked how I was getting there, and I said helicopter. And it said, well, that's very unique, but make sure you have like a permission slip and all this stuff. And then I just said, wait, I changed my mind. We're taking camels. And it told me, no, you really should not take camels. They don't do well in the Minnesota climate. And after going around a little bit about camels, we came back to taking a bus. And I asked if there were any places we could go in New Ulm for some beer after the field trip. And it told me that that was not okay, that is not the purpose of a field trip, and that I should be focusing on the educational aspects of the field trip with my students, and that perhaps here were some other places we might like to go instead that would be close to Shell's. So it is at least entertaining to play with, but also when I asked for information about, you know, Shell's, or asked for the other places it pointed me to in town, it gave me some really good information that I think could be a great starting point, especially if you're, you know, new to a school or an area and aren't quite sure where to go for field trips, or just want to make sure that you've thought through all the logistics of planning a field trip, because they can be many and a little scary if you forget something. So a great tool there just to kind of help you think through the whole process.
Excellent.
That's pretty cool. And somewhere, Rachel, you've been flagged as a dangerous educator. Sure.
Yep.
Just one with poor judgment. It's fine.
All good.
Thank goodness for AI to keep you on the straight and narrow, though.
Right.
That's probably why it was invented.
Okay. That's funny. Thanks, Rachel. That's schoolai.com. All right, Jason, what do you got?
All right. Well, I pulled an audible on you guys. So I actually added, I'm going rogue a little bit, and I added a second one too. I figured as the more senior correspondent, I would have the opportunity to be able to have you guys bend to my will.
So the first thing.
It was going so well. That's exactly right. So that's why I had to mess everything up. Getting away from AI for just a little bit, I wanted to talk about the cybersecurity rubric. So this is, if you follow any of the like cybersecurity trends or industry trends or anything like that, the NIST framework is kind of the gold standard for how you evaluate the kind of security that you have in your technical environment. So this cybersecurity rubric was put together. It started with ClassLink, which is like a single sign-on provider. But then CDW has gotten involved, and there are a couple other corporations that are really putting some funding behind this. And what this does is, this is a free tool that you can use to evaluate your particular environment based on that NIST framework, but adapted for schools. So we really look at the way that your organization is set up, and it's things like, you know, do you have multi-factor authentication set up? Do you have policies in place for if there's a data breach? Do you evaluate your partners for where they store data? Like, it takes you through a lot of different things. And the idea with this is to not necessarily score 100%, because if you score 100% on this, then you're basically you're the federal government, and you're just not doing that, because then you just don't function, right? So not because they're the federal government, but just you, okay, backing the truck up on that one. You guys understand where I'm coming from. But what this really does is it gives you a framework to have some of those conversations around cybersecurity and information security and data privacy and all of that kind of stuff, and then locate those opportunities for improvement. So what are some of those maybe low-hanging fruit that would be something that would just make this a little bit less attractive of a target, or make things a little bit easier to recover from? Because we're seeing from a national perspective, K-12 is the highest growing target for cybersecurity attacks. So just having some of that knowledge, and an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure, right? So you know, if there are some of these little things that make it more difficult for the bad guys to get you, they're going to go away from you and go towards somebody else. So the cybersecurity rubric, again, free resource for anybody to use, and it's geared specifically towards schools. So that's my first half of my pick of the week. And then
love
my,
it.
And then my second pick, I saw you pulled that up, dayofai.org. So this is a great resource for those that want to teach kids about AI. This is a great resource for teachers, administrators, you know, anybody who's looking at that. And then there is a designated day coming up on May 13th. So if you wanted to,
great day.
We have Day of Code. Now we have Day of AI. So great activities and resources in there for that as well. And now I will cede the rest of my time, Madam Speaker and Sir Guy who's in charge.
Well, May 13th is my birthday, so that's why they're celebrating the day.
Oh, that's exactly right.
That
yep, it's a
next
good time.
Monday.
That's a wonderful day for it.
It's a day it of is. Sally. Yes.
Yes.
All right, Sally, what are you at this week?
Mine comes from our friend Matt Miller, who wrote Ditch That Textbook and who's got a book out about AI as well. But mine's not AI specific.
Sensing it's a theme. Oh, aha.
No theme here. Turn. I go off the tracks completely with okay. End of year thrival, not
survival
guy.
We were off the tracks
guy.
A while ago, so that's fine.
Thanks, Martin. All right. So end of year thrival. This is to help teachers get through these last few weeks of the year when things get a little bit crazy. And often you're just trying to survive. And instead of survive, you're going to thrive, because they have all kinds of resources to help with those gap times. They have inspirational things to do, like kids taking charge. It says Riverside School in Indiana's focus on what it calls life's most valuable lesson, I can. In a school culture where many students assume a do only what the teacher tells me to do mentality, this can help liberate them to think for themselves. So lots of different TED Talks that might be interesting to them, topics to consider changing up your classroom atmosphere, having some music or some other things going, whatever it may be. They've got lots of links and things. But nice to have is an interactive end of year thrival, not survival guide from Ditch That Textbook, which we will attempt to embed on the website. Hopefully you'll find it on the Wells Tech website, if not embedded a link to it. But they have different review games that your kids can come in and click through, so you can share this interactive thing with them on their computers, and they can just come here and explore an interactive free time choice board. And it has lots of different things that you can pick from to do with choices. And there are other final project ideas and links to those. And That's what they've got. Oh, and they have links to some of these TED Talks that are inspirational as well. So definitely check out this interactive guide. It might be something that you'd want to even share with your students on their computers and allow them to explore at this time of year. That's what I've got for you.
Awesome.
Thrival.
Definitely sharing this with my teacher wife. She's definitely in survival mode.
So,
second grade teacher,
season.
And she's walking down the hall singing and doing the choreography that she hopes her second graders will do at the end of tomorrow, I think. So
awesome.
She needs this. Awesome. Thanks, Sally. Mm-hmm. All right. My pick of the week. Apple had an iPad event. I think it was on Tuesday, and they introduced some new iPads. And I've talked about iPads before. Definitely a part of my productivity suite. I mostly use iPads for a couple things: note-taking, task management, and reading or content consumption. So, for instance, this book we've been reading was all read on my iPad. So I got a digital copy. I don't know if I can show this or not. Does that show up there? There it is. But allows me to highlight, take notes, and keep everything together. So I'm a big fan of iPads. The good news is that, there's a lot more expensive iPads now available, of course, that Apple wants you to buy, and new pencil and new keyboards, blah, blah, blah. But what that means for some of us is that the iPad, the base iPad, price dropped by about $100, I think, this time. So now you can get a kind of the original iPad's not, it's actually the 10th gen iPad, but $349 for an iPad. So if you haven't tried a tablet, this might be a good opportunity to dive in at a reasonable price. You can use a pencil with it, all that stuff too, or an Apple Pencil, of course. But I find it to be a great productivity device. It's just kind of fun. When the grandkids are over, they can play on it too. There's lots of uses for it. Super portable. We take it camping, et cetera, et cetera. But truly, I think a good productivity device that is available, been around, and there really isn't much competition in this space. You can try other tablets, and they're not so good. The iPads are really good. The battery life is awesome. Screens are awesome. Even the speaker system is great. So I'm a big iPad fan. So if you're interested in getting into an iPad, it's cheaper than ever. So that's my pick of the week. Oh, I have a bonus pick. I won't call it a second
you guys.
Pick. I just found this the other day. It's probably been around for a long time, but it's a YouTube hack. It's not a hack. It's a feature. If you press and hold on a video while it's playing, or click and hold on a video while it's playing, it automatically goes to double speed, which is awesome. So I'm used to kind of scrubbing around with a little thing at the bottom, and sometimes you can get it, sometimes not. But if you just kind of want to skip through something that you're not that interested in, press and hold, and it'll go double time as long as you're holding. So that's a life changer for me. So you don't want to need to see the whole thing. I just want to see the stuff I'm interested in. But going double time through the boring stuff is super easy. So that's my pick 1A today.
Okay. I'm going to give you props for pick 1A, Martin, because you just solved a mystery for me. I'm an iPad support person for my mother-in-law, and she brings it to me and says, I can't understand. They're going so fast, and I didn't change it, And I'm like, no, if you go in here, it's changed to 2X, But I bet you she's been pressing it and holding it, and it's been
maybe
sticking.
Maybe so. Yeah, yeah.
So, well, Rachel, mystery.
Rachel and Jason are nodding there. It's like, yeah, I knew this. This is not news.
No big deal. You did that for me. Behind the times.
I'm super excited. So, all right, those are our picks of the week. Why don't we move on to community news and feedback?
Well, just to wrap up our AI discussion, I thought it would be great to look at some of the recent news about AI, and I found different articles that you might want to explore. Is it fair and accurate for AI to grade standardized tests? They're talking about how more tests are requiring more open-ended questions. Standardized tests have moved away from a lot of the multiple choice, and a large percentage of the questions have to be open-ended. I think 25% on the test that they take in Texas. And so they're using AI to grade more and more standardized tests instead of people. I'm sure people check on it and things like that. Mm-hmm. But there was kind of a debate about the ethicalness. What's a good word for that? I didn't say that well, but how ethical it is to have AI grading standardized tests. Mm-hmm. Another article I read was from Newark Public School System, where they're spending $12 million for AI camera systems for safety. And they say these camera systems can detect things like people carrying guns and things of that nature, people in different locations in a quick amount of time and things like that, which I thought was really interesting. And so we're seeing just different uses of AI. I hadn't realized that security cameras were tuned into AI. In the Los Angeles public school system, they're doing a splashy AI chatbot. And so just an article about what they're doing and how they're using it and how it behaves. The chatbot is called Ed, and he's described as our nation's very first AI-powered learning acceleration platform. So again, seeing these different large school districts investing in different ways in AI, I thought these might be interesting reads. And the last one I have listed is from a site called Freethink, and it's why AI celebrities are teaching kids math and physics. So basically, they've come across this TikTok account called Onlook that's using deep fakes of celebrities' faces. I should have it muted. So there's Elon Musk talking about logarithms and things of that nature. So they're trying to kind of attract an audience in this TikTok world that we live in that would be interested in these celebrity faces showing up in math and science type lessons. So that thought that was pretty interesting as well. How AI can be used in so many different creative ways, and get a review of logarithms if you check out the article. So that's what I have for you, just kind of a roundup of some of the articles from this week that I found about education and AI usage all over the board.
You want to contribute to the show, wellstech.wells.net is the place to go. You can comment on any show. There's a comment box there you can use. You can leave a voicemail. All of our socials are listed there, so you can connect with us in a lot of different ways. We would love your feedback, and that can take any form. You can talk about the show, things that you've experienced, things you want us to talk about, comments on the tools we've talked about, questions, suggestions for future shows or for future interviews, all available to you, and we'd love to hear you. So take advantage of that. And good old-fashioned email, wellstech@wells.net, is a great way to get to me and Sally, and we'll include that in the show as appropriate. Sally, what are we going to do next time we gather together, this little WellsTech party?
We are bringing back a WellsTech tradition, and that's speaking with a Wisconsin Lutheran Seminary senior about his topic of his senior thesis. And I'm super excited about this one. It will be with seminarian Silas Dose, and his paper is titled "Here Be Dragons: Fantasy, Escapism, and a Christian Response." I think that'll strike a chord with some techies out there in our listening audience who may enjoy a bit of dragon lore in their lives. Who knows? Mm-hmm. Really interesting read. I've already been through it and really enjoyed it, and very thought-provoking. So the cool thing is we're going to interview Silas a bit in advance because I think he'll be busy the day we broadcast it, but it'll actually be assignment day when we're broadcasting again, Martin. And so Silas's assignment day, when he learns where he's going to serve in the public ministry as a pastor, we'll be airing that
That's
interview.
That's how we'll be celebrating, yes.
That's right.
So we'll be celebrating Silas. Yes.
Looking forward to it.
Awesome. All right. Thank you, Jason. Rachel, appreciate your time, presence. Even if you agreed too much this time, we still love you. We know you love each other too. That is the show for today. We really appreciate everybody listening, watching. Bring a friend next time, and let's expand that WellsTech family. Thanks, everybody. Talk to you next time. Bye-bye.